birthday this evening. Roseanne is presenting a Candle Spencer for 29 years.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Spencer. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
I'm Spencer, and I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Spencer.
And I'm afraid you're going to hear more from me a little later, so I'll just say thank you, and congratulations on our newcomer. It's an honor to have you here today, and I don't think I've ever heard a better 90-day chip. And I know both of you, and I know Francine, and I think I saw you when you came in. So, anyway, it's good to be here. Thank you.
I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Spencer.
All right. My name is Spencer, and I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Spencer.
Hello, everybody, and thank you all for coming today, and it's just an honor to be here. I remember being in this room. I'm pretty sure. I know it's this building, but this is probably where they have the AA meetings. And I remember being here about 20 years ago. And I'll never forget that meeting. My sponsor was here, and there was another guy sharing. He was in the mafia, and he was talking about how he broke somebody's knees. And but I don't want to get him mad. But I was going to talk on humility as a subject tonight, and I'm a little disappointed on the size of the crowd, so I think I'll wait on that. And maybe just start off with a little experience, strength, and hope. I was born in the state of New York, and I moved to L.A. when I was one. And I grew up in East L.A., and that was before they had a state college out there. In fact, the freeway was just being put in, the 10 freeway. I remember as a little kid seeing all those big bulldozers and what have you. And my first encounter with the nefarious substances of food, or derivatives thereof, was with X-Lax. And, a little kid of 5 years old doesn't know the difference. At least I didn't. It looked like it. It smelled like it. It tasted like it. I thought it was chocolate. And in those days, this is probably about 1950, and I don't know. But anyway, in those days, they had, the giant size X-Lax. It was a ball like that. And when my parents woke up, I had a habit of kind of getting up in the morning and, preparing my own before breakfast. This is at 5, or maybe I was 6 at the most. And they saw the silver foil, and they just knew what was going on, and they rushed me to County General, not far away, and they pumped my stomach. And I still, can recall that cold, cold steel table. And the nurse was just a bitch, giving me the, making me, pumping my stomach. And so anyway, that really stuck in my mind. I've always remembered that. It's never, and I don't think I've ever had X-Lax again. My path in compulsive overeating grew from that. I remember I had also some. I was, the school would call up my parents from time to time, and they would inform them that their their son Spencer was having some difficulty in getting along with some of the kids. And I was called on the carpet numerous times. I remember this is in kindergarten, first grade, second grade. And I remember when I'd get sent home from school, I always had a stash of money. And I got that in different ways. I had a coin collection, but I was also, if I was short or if I didn't want to give up a good coin, I'd steal something from my father's pockets. And I did that quite a bit, but I always had money for the Helms Bakery truck. And they would have a whistle, you know, a two-tone whistle. And it was like one of the most beautiful sounds. And, a donut was a nickel back then. And you know, a quarter, you were home free with a quarter, with a dollar, man, forget it. But I would stay home, and that's what I would do, is I'd eat those donuts. So, although I was a smart kid, they told my parents in school he was intelligent, but potential was the word. But I never seemed to live up to that the potential that they had thought I should. But along with that, I always at the helm was truck breaker, just so the guy wouldn't think I was a glutton, you know, at 7, 8, 9 years old. I always ordered it was 3 cents. It was called a French roll, just a plain roll. And I have no designs on eating it. I never did. I just threw it out. It was to just kind of throw him off the mark that I was, you know, into donuts and all of that. How can a kid at that age, you know, think of something like that? But I probably learned, you know. So anyhow, my parents were concerned about a few things. I was seeing a psychologist. I think I went to see a shrink. I remember going out to UCLA and playing with some blocks and doing something, and that didn't last too long. And then I was getting fat as a kid. I don't know how fat I was, but I was a fat kid, probably 20, 30 pounds. I have no idea remembering. But they sent me to a diet doctor in Pasadena, and I remember this was a doctor who, you know, a nice man. It was a big office, too. And it was I would take Methadrine. They give me a shot of that every week, I think. I went, or every 2 weeks. And then I'd take some other little pills, which was also speed, a speed derivative. And then I took a thyroid pill, because they took this blood work and they said, well, he has a thyroid, that's his deal. And I'll never forget, they gave me a beaker. It was a scientific, you know, beaker, 2 liters, whatever. It was a big size of sugar water to take this test. I'll never forget it. And, you know, I've never been partial to Kool-Aid after that either. So anyhow, what I would do, you know, and my father was just a working class guy, a civil servant, and my mother worked as well. But I'd get off to school, and I'd take the bus, and there was I'd get on the, just where I had to wait for the bus, there was a Curry's ice cream stand. Now, Curry's was like Dairy Queen back in the 50s. And I'd stop off at the Curry's, and get my favorite thing, which I won't mention. Use your imagination. And I take the bus and I go to Pasadena and I get my shots, you know, and I get a shot, and it was, and anyway, nothing was happening. I wasn't losing any weight. Anyway, and my dad was an angry man would be, you know, putting it lightly. And he just didn't go for the whole deal, and he'd get into a rage, and my mother would get in between us, you know, because he scared the shit out of me growing up, but I just wasn't getting it, and I wasn't doing it. And what I was doing is I was giving him a big finger. I didn't want to lose weight. I wanted to eat. And I wanted to eat because I was hurting so bad. It was hurting so bad. I wasn't getting what I needed from him or from my mother. I just wasn't feeling loved as a kid. And I wanted to eat, to just kind of push it up, push it away, push it down. I don't know, but I didn't know that's what it was then. I had no idea. I only know it later on, you know, coming into the program of OA. So, anyhow, I got into high school, and by now I'm in the 12th grade, and I weighed about 275, which is pretty big for a kid. And we moved from the east side of town to Beverly Hills. And my father was running for office in Beverly Hills, some political office, and it didn't fly, but we ended up staying there. And we were in the low-rent district of Beverly Hills, and I felt, and here I was in a completely different environment, and I felt so deprived, and all the kids, it seemed to me, all, had an XKE. They had just came out. This was 1962. A Jaguar XKE. It was just there was a couple of kids that had that. And there was the Corvette had been out for a few years, and there were several Corvettes. And then, you know, and I had a motor scooter. And I felt so, you know, and I compared myself to those guys. And of course, they had the hot little 17-year-old cheerleaders. They were, you know, they were jocks, and they would have the nice babe, and here I was, this fat guy. I had such a low opinion of myself. And anyhow, they're all talking about where they're going to go to school, you know, Yale and Harvard and blah, 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 blah. And I was a C-minus student in high school, and somehow, though, I got it in my head. I wanted to in the Navy. I wanted to go on submarines. Maybe I saw a movie. I don't know what it was. I want to be on submarines. So I went to another shot doctor in Beverly Hills. Same kind of doc. Same shot, same pills, same thing. And I lost all the weight that came off. And, you know, I was just a normal weight when I graduated. And I did not go to my high school prom. There was a girl that I was friendly with, but I was afraid to ask her. I just had such a low opinion of Spencer, and I didn't go. But I went into the Navy, and I got into submarines, and I got through submarines. I was on them. I had a wonderful experience in the Navy. I was in there for 4 years. And I was only later to find out, maybe about 5-10 years ago, that one out of about 1,500 people get to where I was in on submarine service. They just filtered through a lot of people. So I was really motivated, evidently, and I really was able to make that happen for me. And so anyway, I had that experience, and I was... In the service, I was just, I did just enough to keep out of trouble. But I really, after a short time, the discipline and listening to what people, you know, taking orders, God, it was just more than I could, I just wanted out. And so I did my time. I was 17 when I went in, and I came out 21. And when I came out of the service, I was a normal weight, and I started going to City College out here in Santa Monica, and I met a girl at a party, and we went together for about a couple of years, and we ended up getting married, and I got married in 1968 to this gal. And she's a wonderful gal, just a really sweet woman, or a sweet family. And I don't want to digress too much, but I think while she was going to UCLA, I was going to City College, and I went to a lecture there by a guy. I'd only heard his name. I didn't know anything about him, but his name was Timothy Leary. Well, I thought... I thought that I'd heard the Sermon on the Mount from this guy. I mean, you talk about getting a hook. You know, I just said, this guy has got exactly what I want. And I've never done any drugs or anything, and in a very short time, I was smoking dope and taking some hallucinogenics, LSD. And it only took, I think I took it twice, LSD, along with a couple other things. But my drugging days did not last too long. And I was in a psychiatric hospital, lickety-split. I was just, I nearly lost my mind. I just, I can still recall, I had flashbacks for 10 years from taking LSD. And I don't know exactly what starts what, but anyway, I just knew I got away from that whole scene I was with. I was living in Venice, got away from all those kind of people. I was married now, and I had a little job here, or I had a job there, but more or less everything was fine except, I escaped what I thought was just a fate worse than death, was that LSD experience. And I put on 150 pounds in about 2 years. And it just came, I mean, you know, I'd had a trouble with my weight over the years, but here, all of a sudden, boom, I put on 150 pounds. So I tried many, many different diets. I was probably about, probably about 23, tried several different diets. I went to college. I graduated college. I went to they call it the University of Fresno now. It was a state college. And I just love philosophy. I love Far Eastern studies. And I ended up graduating summa cum laude. And I just really, you know, when I'm focused and I'm doing something that grabs me, I'm able to get with it. So that surprised me. I was the first, you know, graduate of college, anyone in my family. And also I was the only one there at my, except for my wife, at my graduation. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I can remember about that. But anyway, I heard about, I was about 318 pounds to be exact. I was 25, 26. But I heard about Weight Watchers. And I went into Weight Watchers. This is like 1972. And I lost all my weight. I lost 150 pounds, whatever it was. And I just looked fantastic. And I said, I'll never get fat again. I don't know. You know, you've all heard that one. And we had a wonderful speaker up in Santa Barbara last night. He said it lasted for about 10 minutes, and mine lasted for about the same amount of time. I stayed at that goal weight for 10 minutes, and then you know how it works. Slowly but surely, ch-chunk, ch-chunk, and the pants get tighter, and all of a sudden, I'm 33 years old, and I put back just about all of it. I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1978, and I was up to about 275 again. And I never thought I'd get fat again after that Weight Watcher experience. And was still married at the time, and I saw an article in the paper, "Are You Addicted to Food?" And I put that on the refrigerator, and for 2 years, it stayed there. And finally, I called it, and the lady said, told me the time of the meeting. This is a little place in Malibu, a little community church. And so I went, and I said, are there going to be any men here? She was writing happy faces on the blackboard or something. And she said, it's unlikely. You know, maybe, but I sat down. And I had a full beard, and I think I was smoking a cigar then, you know, a little community room. I was 33 years old, and it was a group of women, of about seven women. And the leader of that meeting was a young gal. She was about 22, 23 years old, and she'd lost 10 pounds or whatever it was. And she was so high. She was as high as a kite, so happy. She was so grateful. And about not eating compulsively anymore. But when she talked, now this is my first meeting. I swear, I'm not kidding you, I swear, you can, you know, unless I was having another flashback, there was a halo around her head. That's what I saw. And then it went around to each person around the thing, and finally there was this, they were all in muumuus, the ladies, you know, they this big size. I said, what is this one going to have to say? And they'd say something wonderful. They talked about feelings. I'd never heard anybody talk about feelings this way. And finally, it came around to me, and they said, would you like to introduce yourself? This is your first meeting, so I know what it's like. And I said in a very high voice, I'll be back. And I've been coming back for 29 years. I've never left Overeaters Anonymous. Because... this is a poor metaphor, but because I know which side of the bread it's buttered. I knew that I found what I've been looking for my whole life. I knew what I found when I was a kid. I was always kind of spiritually orientated. And I always wanted to find a relationship with spirit, even as a kid. And it really pissed my dad off, but that's how it was. You know, he wanted me to... You know, I was brought up in a Jewish home, but nobody practiced it. But you know, and I just rebelled. I wouldn't take any education in Judaism. And I sure had that inclination even as a kid. Well, anyway, I came into OA, and I just thought this was the greatest thing. Something. It just rang something within me. It was like, you know, the Holy Grail. It was like, you know, hearing your enthusiasm with your 90 days, it was like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And not to be thin. Yeah, I wanted to be a normal weight, but I wanted that place within myself that I saw other people have, that I saw the thin people have, or normal people have, but I never could feel it within myself. I wanted that. And I thought that this is where I'm going to find it. And for the most part, my instincts were 100%, and that's why I've never left. I got a sponsor in a very short time. Back then, this was 1978, the gray sheet was the thing people were doing. People were doing other things, but that's, you know, my sponsor had taken off 100 pounds, and he said, if I can do it, you can do it. And I said, okay, let's do it. And so I did that, and there was a whole group of us back then, and there was Clark and another one, and I'm sure you remember. And of course, Roseanne was there, and there was a whole wonderful group of people. And I lost all my weight. I lost 100 pounds in a year, a little less than a year. And I just gave this everything I had. Well, within a short time, that marriage ended. I was thin, and behavior of growing up as a kid expressing anger appropriately separated my wife from myself, and we got divorced, and that was a rough year. I was living out in I was living in, what do you call it, house sitting in Pasadena. And that's where I had a place to stay. And I was so depressed. And here I was thin, and I just wanted to die. I felt alone and such a failure. Even though, you know, and here I've been in Overeaters Anonymous this last year. And I tried to kill myself. I made a suicide attempt by hooking up a hose to the car and doing it. It was the middle of summer. And it was so damn hot in the garage. and I'm waiting for these fumes to overtake me, and it just ain't happening. And I called my sponsor at the time, who was, I'll think of that guy's name, but Roseanne would remember, but he came over, he was working, and he said, "Have you had lunch yet?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, what the hell? You can't kill yourself on an empty stomach." He came over and we had lunch together. And he said, "You're going to go to a meeting tonight." And I went to a meeting, and I remember it was on. I said, "I feel like hell." He said, "Doesn't matter." And I went to a meeting that night, and I think it was in Alhambra. And the gal says, "Would you speak tonight?" And I said, "No, I feel like hell." And she said, she asked me again anyway. I had learned enough to do what you're asked. And I spoke, and I just said exactly how it was. I said exactly how it was. I got a postcard about 3 years later from a young girl that was in Israel at the time, that was there at that meeting, and she sent me a postcard telling me how much that meant to her. I'm thinking about running out of time, but I tried a lot of different things in abstinence. And abstinence has been a lot of different things for this compulsive overeater. And I've done a lot of things, but I have just a few minutes left. And then, oh, 20 after, well. You know, I was thinking about breaking up a little bit right here and trying to swallow, but I remember I'll jump around a little. About 2 years ago, I kept my weight off pretty well for all these years, up until about 2 years ago. Just to fast forward, I moved to Santa Barbara. I left LA around 89, and moved up to Santa Barbara. I always wanted to live there. In fact, I heard somebody at a 12-step meeting talk about you could live your dream and to go after your dream. And I believed them again. And so I always wanted to live in Santa Barbara, and I moved up there. And I started a business. After about 6 weeks, I met a gal up there, and We went together for about a year and a half, and we ended up getting married. And we've been married now 15 years. And it's a wonderful relationship. And it's I always tell everybody, you know, just how it is. It's good 85% of the time. Those 15%, man, it's hell. And I try to get out of Dodge if I can, you know, and let things cool off and then come back. But 85%, let's see, that's a B plus. Not so bad. Not so bad. And it's pretty good. And she's not in the program. She weighs 120 pounds and she's like a horse. But she's very, very positive. She's supportive with me in the program. But about 2 years ago, without hitting myself over the head, but I have a disease called compulsive overeating, and I started eating more than I needed. and about I put on about a pound a month for the last 2 years. And I tried many different things. I tried a couple of years ago. I tried Food Addicts Anonymous. Food Addicts. I forget what the hell it's called. And I did pretty well for a very short time. But I'll never forget. I was after you lose your weight, you know, they allow you to speak up at the podium for a minute. And I asked. It was in a hotel, and I took a glass of water and took. No, the secretary blew up. She said, "You can't drink in Food Addicts. You can't drink water at a meeting." I said, "Well, I'm not going to tell you what I said, but I said." But you know, not to knock that, because I'll tell you, it was helpful. It was helpful. But I always came back to Overeaters Anonymous, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, working steps, however faultingly. But I've had the same sponsor now for 19 years. I moved up to Santa Barbara, and I found them very soon. By then, I had about 5 years in AA. After 4 years of going to meetings in Overeaters Anonymous and going to AA meetings to strengthen my OA program, I realized that if I was to drink again, I was going to die. And I was periodic, and I would get to a certain place and I'd get drunk. And my last drunk was in a blackout. I don't remember driving home, but I did. I drove home from Westwood, and 2 days later, I had 2 glasses of white wine. I went out on a date, and I was single at this time, and this is in the late 80s. And I got into another suicidal depression, and I wanted to kill myself at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I had a pistol at my head. And like all good AAers do, or OAers, or whatever whatever A you are, I called my sponsor at 3:30. And he said, he told me what I needed to hear. He said, "You're probably an alcoholic." And I went to my meeting, to an AA meeting the next night with a whole different attitude. What had happened to me is I stepped over that imaginary line. I thought I wasn't an alcoholic, but I had stepped over where I realized that for me to drink again, considering my makeup between Tim Leary and everything else, I realized I had a wheel loose in my shopping cart. And I'm not one to be able to take a drug like alcohol. And that's what it finally dawned on me, that alcohol is a drug. And I'm not playing well enough. My brain cannot handle that kind of stuff. So AA has been very wonderful for me in conjunction. But my primary disease is food. And so getting back to it, and I do have an AA sponsor, Nikki knows we co-sponsor each other in Overeaters Anonymous. He's got about 20 or 25 years in OA and also in AA, and we get along pretty well. But getting back to this 2 year, these last 2 years, putting on weight, I don't know how much of it's denial and how much of it is disease. And like I say, I'm not going to beat myself up, but I got on the scale. An old sponsor of mine has had some success with Weight Watchers. He's been in OA all these years. Peter Smith, maybe you remember him. Peter's living up in Oregon, and he took off about 30 or 40 pounds with Weight Watchers. And he said, "Listen, if whatever you're doing isn't working, they won't let you drink water and the other deal. How did you?" And about a month ago, I started going to Weight Watchers. I went back after all these years. Been 35 years. I got something in the mail today. They looked up in their archives. They found out, yeah, you are a lifetime member. So, 35 years later, my gosh. But, you know, it's so different. And I'm telling you this only because this is my experience. This is what, I've been going about 3 weeks now, a month, and I've lost about 3 pounds, and I'm happy about that, and I'm going in the right direction. What I have from Weight Watchers is a food plan. And probably half of you have been there already, but it's so different for me this time because I have my OA program. I have my, there hasn't been a day in many, many years where I haven't talked to somebody in the program at least once a day. So that's where I'm at in my physical recovery today is I got a food plan that's kind of working for me real well. And I know just what I need to eat today. And I don't have to really give it a whole lot of effort. And what's giving me my ability to stay on that food plan, I know, is our step two, which is coming to believe. And I know that there's a power working in my life. And I'll tell you just what I told a newcomer to. I went to a morning meeting. It was an AA meeting, and this kid, he looked like the proverbial dog trying to cross the Hollywood Freeway at rush hour. His eyes were rolling, and he was so frightened. And I told him, it's going to be okay. There's a power greater than myself that is carrying me all these years. And he'll continue to carry me. And I'll just make myself as available as I can to him or her or it. But most of the time, I don't know what it is. I was in a lot of self-judgment about even coming here today because I'm not at my goal weight. And I thought about so much that I've been given over the years and Overeaters Anonymous to go through going through depression many years, dealing with divorce, death in the family. I had way showers all along the way to show me that this is a disease. I've watched people put on weight. I've watched so many people perish from this disease. And I'm still here. And I've never left. And I can't say where I'll be. You know, maybe I'll become a Weight Watcher star again and say, okay, Overeaters Anonymous, see ya. I don't think so. I've been doing this a long time, and this is my home. I saw a little Jewish man walking to shul this morning. He had his little skull cap on, and he was walking there. He's a religious man. I don't know him personally, but I know that's where he was going. And I said, "Good Shabbos." And we talked a little. He says, "Well, why don't you come?" I said, "It's not for me. I've been there and done that. But thank you for offering." And he said, "Well, maybe you'll change your mind." Who knows? Maybe I will. But I have to tell you, in 3 minutes, this is my church. This is where I get my connection with a higher power. This is where I feel the presence of God through you. The first word of our step is we. And the third word of our first step is we. So here we have two we's in the first step of our 12 steps. And I only discovered that myself this last year. But it must mean that we're meant to be with each other. We need each other. And none of us, I certainly didn't get here alone. I've had so much help. And I'm so glad that I overcame my fear of not being perfect and not being at goal weight to be here today. My weight is about 225. I don't know how realistic, but anyway, my goal is 175, and that's where where I want to be. And I'm going to do it one day at a time, and like that first sponsor told me, 1 pound at a time. And I'm going to do it with you, and I never have to be alone. ever again. So thank you for listening. Oh, give me.
Could you talk a little bit about how you work your 11th step, you know, your prayer and meditation, how that works into your program?
Okay, the question was is how I use the 11th step. And, various things. What I'm doing lately, the last year, is I'm practicing mindfulness. And mindfulness is a little different than meditation, but I can do it at any time. I can feel the pressure of this podium on my palms right now, and I can feel my feet on the podium itself. I can feel a little sweat on my palms, and I can do this anytime, anywhere, particularly when my mind starts spinning. And I've been dealing with something the last several weeks where my committee in my head won't stop. I don't take any medications whatsoever. I've been that route, and it's just the last 12 or 14 years it's just my path. It's not to have to take any medications. I've exhausted that way. I used to call it depression, so I don't call it that anymore. I call it a funk. So I've been in a funk for some number of weeks. And what helps me is this mindfulness of being in the here and now, being present, being right here. And I'll start listening to my breath. And this will carry me. And being present, I know that this is the only place I can ever be sure of. Because the past is gone, the future, I don't know what's going to happen. My mind would like to tell me a lot of things. It would like me sometimes to just throw myself off a bridge. And I said, thank you for sharing. And I'll practice some mindfulness and get centered. So it's something I carry with me a lot, and I do it throughout the day. And that's a hell of a question. In fact, it's saving. It's really I need it more than ever. Thank you. Time for one more? Yes.
What was the hard step for you?
And the question is, what is the hardest step? The hell of a question. Well, I'm guessing you're talking about the 12 steps. And, it would have to be step 2. And the reason I say that is I have such a lot of self-judgment at times, particularly when I go through these periodic deals where my mind won't stop. It just will not stop. And I want to discount myself. And then there's judgment in that. Well, if I really believed in God, if I really had an understanding, if I really surrendered, if I really, you know, I wouldn't feel this way. And so that's I would say step 2 is the one that probably I have the most difficulty with at times. But then I'm able to always go back to step 1, and I remember we. And I always stay with you. I've never left, and that's what's saved me all these years. So it's a hell of a question.